You are listening to a Hillbilly Horror Stories classic episode.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now welcome your host, Jenny Polly, and his lovely wife, Tracy. I hear she's a lovely girl.
If you love me,
twice on the pipe.
If the answer is no, oh my sweetness, knock three times means you meet me in the hallway.
This is Dakota, and you're listening to my grandma and grandpa on Hillbilly Horror Stories.
All right, everybody, and welcome to a very special 30th edition of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry, and that's Tracy beside me.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
I'm not sure that meant anything, but...
It meant hello, how are you?
Okay.
Well, me.
I'll take your word for it. Okay. Some of our Hispanic listeners can tell us if that's what that actually meant.
Be ready to be amazed.
The introduction you heard is from our adorable little granddaughter, Dakota, and... She did a fantastic job. We've got another granddaughter, and I tried to get her to say a little something, but I could only get one word out of her, and after you hear it, you will definitely know she's a member of this family. And here she is.
Poop.
That's right. For all of you keeping score at home, she said poop. She could have said any word in the world, and she chose poop.
She likes to talk about poop for some reason. I'm not sure just why, but we still love her.
And in case you have any declarations about Tracy being country as... I was going to say fuck, but that was a bad word. But
you can't say that.
She said poop.
She said poop.
Oh. Guys, you're probably wondering, why are we playing Tony Orlando in the beginning with the knock three times? But it's because we have a really cool story to tell you about tonight. It's actually more of a, I guess you could say, a superstition than a story. But we've got a bunch of little stories that go along with it. But it's about death knocks. I don't know how many people are familiar with it, but we're going to tell you about that. And then we're going to talk about the Stanley Hotel, which has several ghosts and a famous book that came from it. We also have an interview with the Haunted Explorers. They're a ghost hunting crew out of Las Vegas. And we're going to tell you a story about sleep paralysis from a listener who just found the show and heard our episode and had a really cool story. So we have a jam-packed episode for you tonight.
Exciting. I can't wait.
So let's go ahead and jump right into it. I want to do a couple of shout outs first, because I know we've been doing them kind of at the end of the night, but I want to go ahead and do some of these in the beginning. First one, this was one I overlooked. She interacts with us on the Facebook page all the time, and I don't know why I haven't done it yet. It's just an oversight on my fault. So Priscilla Gordon, thank you so much for being so active on our Facebook page and being a great listener, and sorry that it took me so long to get you a shout-out.
Yay, Priscilla.
Another one that I probably should have already done, and I think we've done a shout-out, but I want to give some extra recognition, is Robert Burton. Robert actually has taken it upon himself to volunteer and do some research on a bunch of different stories from around the world, because we've got listeners from around the world, and I want to try to get some kind of story at least close to home. Last week we did the Japanese Suicide Forest, and that's that gives something for our Japanese, but we've got several other countries such as Australia, India, Canada, and Robert is actually helping us locate some cool stories from all around the world that we can start using.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. I can't wait to hear what you got.
I've got, this is kind of funny, Amanda DeGrasse, I hope I'm doing that right, but Amanda actually reached out to me on Twitter because I sent her a request and said, hey, listen to the show. And she's like, hey, I already listened to the show, bitch. she didn't say that, but she said she was already a listener. So I had some cool conversation with her yesterday.
Nice.
That's, if you guys join us on Twitter, I man that. So I respond. I get several direct messages every day and tweets, and we respond to all of them. But I highly advise everybody to join our Facebook page. It's not a group. It's just a page. But we do a lot of fun stuff, and we interact with you guys a lot on there. So if you want to talk to us and send suggestions or just talk about what's going on in sports or whatever, we talk to everybody who wants to talk to us. So it's a cool way to interact with the show and know what's coming up for upcoming shows. With that being said, I do have one request And this is something that I do last couple of shows. If I hear a podcast that I really like, especially if it's an up-and-coming podcast, I try to get the word out there. I did it last week for Don't Break the Oath. Them guys were very thankful for you guys that gave them an opportunity. And we're going to do it again this week. I got a couple of young ladies, Em and Christine, and they have a podcast. They're only on their, I think the sixth episode came out today, maybe the fifth. And it's called And That's Why We Drink. These young ladies are very funny, and they're getting their feet underneath of them. They're starting to get listeners, and they're really a fun listen. So give them an opportunity, and I think you'll be surprised, and let's grow with them. I think as they go on, they're going to get better and better. You can already see it if you listen to episode one and listen to the last one. It's been noticeable improvement. It's tough when you're first starting out doing this, and it takes a while to get used to having a microphone stuck in front of your face and get that comfort level, but they're doing a fabulous job, and I hope all of you will give them a listen and see what you think.
And I like the name of their show, too. It's pretty awesome.
They have some their graphic, their logo is awesome. It's
yes,
look,
it's very cool.
It's made like a Ouija board, but it spells out and that's why we drink. So it's, if nothing else, it's worth checking out just for the graphics.
It's got blood and guts all over it.
It does not have blood and guts all over. Tracy's in one of those moods today, so there's no telling how this is going to turn out. So let's talk a little bit about Death Knox. Now, I wanted to talk about this subject because I've actually known about this for a very long time, several years. But when I talk to people about it, it seems like nobody that I've talked to has ever heard of this before. And, you know, we're going to start off with the way I've always understood it. And I've learned as I've started researching this, but I've always had situations to where, and just think about this and see if you've been in this same situation. Have you ever been asleep? You hear 3 pounds on the door. It sounds like, just think about like what it would sound like on a castle door with the echo, you know, the boom, boom, boom. Have you ever heard that and just woke up in the middle of the night thinking there's somebody knocking on the door and then there's nobody there? I've actually had this happen 2, 3, 4 times and then actually went to the door because it was that realistic to realize there was nobody there. So was it something I was just imagining? I don't know, because when I started looking into it, I found out that there's actually a phenomenon called death knocks. Now, this goes all the way back to the 1800s, where people would swear that if you hear 3 knocks on the door or anywhere, and it doesn't have to be in the middle of the night, this could be while you're awake, but they call it the 3 knocks of death or death knocks. And what that supposedly say, there's different variations of the story, but a lot of times people will hear this, and within sometimes minutes, they hear that somebody they know or and love have passed away. It could be a friend, family member. Sometimes it's, you know, some people will tell you that it's either 3 days, 3 weeks, or 3 months to the day you hear it, somebody's going to pass away. So there's the different variations. But I've got a bunch of stories that actually collaborate with this, and I thought I'd share these with you guys. So here's the first one. This is actually from a gentleman named Hensix in upstate New York. But he says, when I was 15 years old in 1965, I lived out in the country in a small town called Gasport. One cold and very snowy evening, we all were gathered in the living room around the television when we suddenly heard a loud pounding on the front entry door. The door was sealed with weather stripping in the winter for the winter, and we never opened it. It was in a dark place, didn't have any kind of lighting, so nobody goes there. The pounding was so loud that my mother went out to the side door to see whoever was knocking to walk over to the side door. Tell him to come over to the side door. Whatever. She called again, and there was no answer. She turned on the outside light over the front door and peered out the window, and there was nobody there. She went out and looked. There was no marks in the snow where anybody had been walking over there. So it seemed very odd that somebody could be, you know, out there since there was no footprints in the fresh snow. My dad, being a skeptic, he suggested the noise was wind blowing something against the door. The next morning, we got a call that our Uncle Charlie had passed away unexpectedly. So that's one of those stories. Here's another one. As a child at the age of 8, I was in care of my German grandma. I had been drawing at the kitchen table, my grandparents' farmhouse, during the summer break. My grandmother was jarring preserves, and we were both startled by 3 loud knocks that seemed to come from nowhere and yet everywhere all at the same time. My grandmother had turned and said nothing for a few minutes. She quickly took me outside to play. Nothing was ever said about it, and you know, the only remained in my memory because of the first being startled and then being angry that I was taken away from my drawing. What a gritty little punk. I later learned many years that my grandmother's sister passed away that evening from a heart-related ailment. Years later, my dad had called when I was home with my partner. My brother suffered from a long-term substance abuse addiction and had extremely hard to deal with that evening. My father went on to add that not only did he have that situation to deal with, but he thought the whole house was going to come down too because he heard three or four large bangs within the walls. My brother died from a cocaine overdose just hours later.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
The last instance took place after my long-term companion pet dog fell violently ill very, very quickly one day. I had no car, but I phoned and requested a vet ambulance to come and get us. As I lay on the floor with her, there were three sharp knocks on the apartment door. I rushed to open it, but there was no one there. The vets arrived approximately 15 minutes later, but my baby girl passed away in my arms less than an hour later. That's from Christopher.
That's terrible.
So Christopher had a couple of experiences.
Poor thing. I don't want to hear no knocks.
Here's a couple more. My story begins back in the 20s when my grandmother was in the kitchen and heard three loud knocks on her front door. There was no one there, but 3 days later learned that her mother had died back in Germany. In 73, my parents were awakened by three loud knocks on the front door. Upon inspection, there was no one there, but received a phone call about an hour later that my uncle had passed away. This was never brought up again until I was telling my uncle about the story at my father's funeral in 1979. He and his wife froze and said that they had heard three loud knocks on their storm door about the same time my father had passed away. They lived in Arizona, which was 3 hours away. Now, 2 weeks ago, my mother awoke to three loud knocks or bangs on the front door. Again, she got up and found nothing at the front door and was immediately scared because of it reminded her of the 1973 incident. 3 days later, my brother was murdered in Louisiana in the early morning. The strangest fact is that all the times a family member heard the knocks, it corresponded with the time of death, give or take an hour, of the family member. And that's from Neil.
Daggone.
So,
ooh, that's so creepy.
Here's another quick one. My mother and her mother have always been gifted by omens. We live in a little town, St. Stephen, New Brunswick, Canada. November 10th, 2011, my mother heard three knocks. She always said that means it takes 3 days, 3 weeks, or 3 months, right to the day, that something bad was going to happen, usually a death. Well, 3 days later, her cousin shot himself in a hunting accident while hunting with his seven-year-old son.
That is amazing. So, I better be not hearing no damn knocks anywhere. And don't you be getting up in the middle of the night and knocking on the door either, because that's how you roll.
Well, here's one from 1979. Miss Hughes of England heard three knocks at 11 p.m. Now, she said that she went and looked at the door, but it didn't surprise her that nobody was there because she's got a really squeaky gate and she can hear when somebody comes through the gate. 30 minutes later, two policemen told her that her husband had been killed. He got struck by a car and was killed in the road.
Aww.
In 1982, Miss Hughes and her daughter heard three knocks on the kitchen window. 15 minutes later, she found her brother dead of a heart attack at the front door. But he hadn't made it to the door to be able to be the one that knocked. So she had two incidences. There's another incident where a guy named Frank had three knocks on his living room wall, and then he found out shortly later that his ex-wife committed suicide. But you can see there's a lot of different stories. I mean, I can literally find probably 50 more stories almost instantly with these same things. Here's one with a Mr. Hannaby. That 2 days before her dad died, I'm sorry, Miss Hannaby, 2 days before her dad died, she told her mom that she heard three knocks, and her mom said it was a sign of death, and her dad died 2 days later.
Let's change the subject. This is depressing.
Well, let's talk about the Stanley Hotel.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
We'll talk about the Stanley, and then we'll do our interview with Haunted Explorers, and then we'll come back and we'll do the listener story. Because that's a really cool story, so we'll save that for last.
All I can say is I hope you guys, none of you all, have any three knocks anywhere. Because that's got me all paranoid and stuff.
What if it's three knocks and it really is Tony Orlando at the door?
Well, I mean, that would be awesome. Because I could get down with that, but not...
Better not happen at late at night. I'll be tying a yellow ribbon around his throat.
Oh.
Waking me up.
No way.
I can take him. He's like old now. He's probably in his 70s.
I don't know. If he's still got his stash, you might have a fight.
What if he shows up at dawn? Our younger listeners won't get that.
Oh.
Stanley Hotel. whole bunch of cool facts about the Stanley. And normally we would have led with this, but I didn't have any Stanley Hotel music, but I had Three Knocks music, so we led with the door with the Death Knocks. Stanley Hotel. It's in Estes Park, Colorado, which is right at the foot of the Rocky Mountain National Forest. And actually, that actually had a lot to do with it, because back when it was built, it became kind of a touristy town. If it hadn't been for that hotel being built and the touristy town being there, they probably wouldn't have that park right there. So that's all part of it. Let's talk a little bit about how it came to be. Right now, it's got 420 rooms.
It's huge and yeah. White. Really, really white.
Yeah, it's got 420 rooms. It was built by Freeland. I'm sorry, I don't want to mispronounce the man's name. Freeland Stanley. He opened it on the 4th of July, 1909. Now, Freeland had a twin brother named Francis, and they actually made a lot of money. These kids were very smart. When they were kids, they would build whittle tops, you know, like the little spinning tops. They would whittle tops and sell them to their friends. So they were entrepreneurs from the very beginning of their time.
Well, good for them.
And they created a product called Stanley Dry Plate, and that was actually a, I guess, a photography product that they ended up making a lot of money off of, because Mr. Eastman from Eastman Kodak bought it from them for a fortune, and I think it was the equivalent of something like $15 million back then, and he used that for what became mostly the way photography is done today, as far as it used to be a really long process with taking a picture, and it's shortened the process tremendously. So that's how they made their money. Then they invented the Stanley Steamer.
Well, who knew you could make so much money cleaning carpets?
This is a different Stanley Steamer.
What do you mean?
Most people probably think of Stanley Steamer, their carpet cleaning company, but the Stanley Steamer back then was an automobile, and it had a steam engine.
Oh.
And so when you think of like the Model T Fords and stuff like that, it's kind of like that, but it had a steam engine instead of a combustible engine, and they made a lot of money off of that. Unfortunately, they were kind of stubborn, and they didn't want to change with the times, and as automobile companies kind of got more complex, they kind of stayed with where they were, and that was the end of that. But they made all their money, and it was no big deal anyway. But Freeland had a situation back in 1903 where he contracted TB. And back in the day, there was no cure for TB, so they advised a lot of people to move out west, and Colorado, because of the high altitude and the good clean air, was a place that a lot of people were advised to go to. Well, they were from Maine, and there was a doctor that originally from Maine that was now in Colorado in that area, mm-hmm. and he said, hey, come on out, Freeland, this will be the place for you. He came out there. They got out there in March of that year, him and his wife, Flora, and they loved it. They just thought it was absolutely fantastic. And in June, they decided to spend the rest of the summer there. And it did wonders for him. His TB started getting a lot better. And within like 3 years later, he was completely cured.
Wow. Three weeks?
Yeah. He ended up living to be 91, 3 years. About 3 years, he was completely cured. I'm sorry if I said 3 weeks.
I was going to say, daggone.
Well, back then, three years was still pretty miraculous. So,
well, but yeah.
He ended up living to be 91 years old.
That's amazing. So, that place is so beautiful, too. Yeah.
So what he decided, because he liked it so much, he wanted to, there was nothing here. There was nothing here. He actually bought the land from the very first person that lived there, which was the Earl of Dunraven. He was the fourth Earl of Dunraven. He was from Ireland. He came over, and he actually, by trick, got a lot of that land, because from being from Ireland, he wouldn't allow to get that land. They had like homesteading acts where as long as you made an improvement on the land, you could get all these lands, but he didn't qualify because he wasn't a U.S. citizen.
No kidding.
So he basically paid all these people to go out there and sit long enough to get the land, and he'd buy the land from them. Then he ended up getting like, you know, 6,000 acres
by doing that. Wow.
And but the Stanley actually bought the land from him mm-hmm. in 1907 and decided to build this hotel. It took 2 years, but he wanted to make it like the top of the top. This was going to be the place where anybody that had money was going to come
to.
It had everything.
Isn't it kind of like in the middle of nowhere, though,
yeah,
right?
It's in the middle of nowhere. And but it's a beautiful place, and he decided he wanted to make the town a resort town.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, or by putting that hotel there and making it, you know, the creme de la creme, You know, this thing had everything. I mean, he built a hydroelectric plant so it could have electricity, which not a lot of places had back in the day.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, they had running water. They had everything. So this was a place where the rich people could come and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually went back to Maine, and he would come there for some of the time. But he, you know, he pretty much just left it for others to run. But he loved the place. He loved it when he would come up there. And he's one of the people that they say that still today haunts the place. So you can see him and his wife, Laura.
He needs to be able to haunt it. That was pretty amazing what he did.
Yeah, but it's pretty incredible what this guy was able to accomplish in his time. Now, when he originally opened up in 1909, it was only 48 rooms. Keeps in mind, it's 420 rooms now.
Oh,
so they've really added on to it since then. Now, the Stanley Hotel is extremely famous for one main reason, and it's because they had a famous author that came to stay there. Do you have any guess who that author was and what the book was?
Dr. Seuss.
No.
Why?
Not unless the book was Horton Hears a Who the Hell Are Those Two Creepy-Ass Kids in the Hallway, which I don't think it was. It was actually Stephen King. And that is where he got the inspiration for The Shining.
Oh, my gosh. You're kidding.
No, it was kind of funny because Stephen King came to stay there. It was like the end of the season, the last day of the season. So there virtually was hardly anybody there. He may have been the only person staying there. And they stayed in room 217. It was him, his wife, his three-year-old little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen King said he woke up in the middle of the night after a horrible dream. He dreamt that his little boy was running down the hallway. And he looked over his shoulder, little boy looked over his shoulder, and he was being chased by a fire hose. But I think we've all had that dream. Or if not.
I don't know. I feel like I've seen that dream somewhere on TV somewhere.
But that's what he said a dream was. But he said he couldn't go back to sleep, so he sat looking out the window, and he lit a cigarette. And by the time he was done with the cigarette, he had the whole basic bones of the book, The Shining.
You know, when you think about that, that's pretty amazing because the place is so beautiful. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And to think what it was like on The Shining.
Well, but The Shining wasn't actually shot there.
Oh. Well,
no, they actually used a hotel. The outside of the hotel was up in Oregon is what they used for the outside. A picture for a hotel up in Oregon is what they used for the pictures for the outside in the movie. And then there was a hotel in Yosemite Park. You can tell I don't write this stuff down. But in Yosemite Park, there's a hotel that they used for the inside. But they actually recorded it in England, and all this was done on a set. The inside of the hotel was the inspiration from the one from Yosemite, but they actually rebuilt that on a set in England, and that's where it was filmed.
That is a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Now, they redid the movie a couple years ago for a miniseries that they did, and they actually filmed all of that at the Stanley Hotel.
Well, how cool. Guess what other movie was there?
What?
Dumb and Dumber.
That's right. Dumb and Dumber was there. So those of you who are sitting there saying, I wonder what this place looks like, if you've ever watched Dumb and Dumber, that was the hotel that Jim Carrey and, which brings me to a good story after this, but Jim Carrey and what's his name? What's the other guy's name?
Dumber.
Dumber. Jim Carrey and Dumber.
What's his name?
But it's the hotel where they stayed at. Because remember, they pulled up in the Lamborghini or the Ferrari,
yeah,
or whatever. But they pulled up there in the front. You see the big, beautiful white hotel with the red roof. That's it.
What's his name?
Yeah. I don't know. That's what IMDb's for. And we'll get that later. Everybody out there knows who we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff. I don't think that's his name.
Jeff.
Daniels.
Daniels.
Jeff Daniels.
Yay.
That's where we need some Jack Daniels.
He has some crazy hair.
And this is why we drink. I'm just kidding. Wrong show. But no, but that was even upstairs when it goes to the bar area, that's the bar in the
yeah,
and
he comes down the big staircase.
Yep. And when he comes down the staircase, that's right at the main entrance of the Stanley. So yeah, that a lot of that footage was actually shot in the Stanley Hotel, so pretty cool. But the story we got about Jim Carrey, when they were filming, he wanted to stay in room 217. And 217 obviously is the room Stephen King stayed in, and there's some hauntings that go on there. Due to a young lady by the name of Elizabeth Wilson, but we'll get to her in a minute. So let's talk about Jim Carrey. So he stays there. In the middle of the night, he comes running down the stairs to the front desk. He's in his pajamas. He says that he demands to be moved to another room immediately. And he even runs outside in a panic. And to this day, he's never told anybody what he saw, what happened, what the problem was. He just demanded to be moved to another room.
Wow. What a puss.
So, yeah, I've seen some of his movies. Talk about scary.
He's great, man. I love him.
He's great in some stuff until he tries to be serious.
Yeah.
But room 217. What's the story with room 217? Well, there was a young lady who worked there by the name of Elizabeth Wilson. And Elizabeth Wilson was basically the head, I guess you could say maid, for lack of a better term. And there was a situation, we told you they had electricity in the place. Well, there was a real bad storm in 1911, and it knocked the electricity out. Now, they had backups. Each room had acetylene, which is a type of gas. They had acetylene lamps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, room 217, she walked into with a lit candle to light the lamps, and there was a gas leak. And back then, the gas, you know, most people, I don't know if you know this or not, natural gas does not have a smell to it. They add that smell that smells like rotten eggs so you can tell if there's a leak. It doesn't naturally have a smell. It's colorless and odorless. And back then, they weren't adding anything to it. So when she walked in, she couldn't smell anything. There was no way of knowing.
She really can't smell it.
Yeah, them. Now she walks in with the candle. It blows up, and it blows the whole big hole in the floor, and she falls down two stories, to the dining room, to which they said, okay, now fix me a sandwich. <Just kidding. laughs> No, she falls down there. She broke several bones. They took her to the hospital. She did a full recovery.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, of course, Mr. Stanley, being the generous man and not, you know, wanting to adhere to workers' comp laws, he went ahead and paid for everything. And he
didn't
also
fire her?
No, and you screwed my hotel up. It burnt 10% of the hotel down, the original hotel. And they said it was a type of flame. I can't remember the it's like a non-combustible type fire that kind of puts itself out. And had that not happened, most of the hotel would have probably been lost. But they only lost 10% of the hotel.
Did it burn her hair off?
I don't know. I have no clue about her hair. They didn't go into that kind of detail.
Oh.
I don't know if she's still got eyebrows or any of that stuff.
Dang, that's amazing. She lived through that.
Yep, she lived through that. And some of the stories I heard is because she was wearing, like, you know, the people wore corsets back in the day, that her corset was so tight that it actually helped save her. I don't know how
what
that could be.
What the heck does that got to
I
do with
have
anything?
No idea. No idea. Unless she bounced. I don't know. But he actually gave her a job for life, and she actually worked there until in the 50s. Until she was in her 90s.
Oh, my gosh. So she was like there for like 40 years or something then.
Yeah, she was there for a very long time.
Wow. Well, that was very awesome of him to do that.
And the funny thing is, she's the type of ghost. They say she's there, and that's the ghost of 217 for the most part. But she does stuff like when they have guests check in, and they'll come and just leave their suitcase and stuff on the bed, and they'll go out and do something. They'll come back, and everything's put away. And then they'll call and say, hey, thanks for putting the stuff away. That was nice. And they're like, no, we didn't do that.
My gosh.
That's kind of Miss Wilson's signature trademark. She doesn't like a messy room, so if you leave your room messy, she tidies it up.
Isn't she nice?
I know. I wish she'd come haunt this house for a while.
I agree with you there.
But
that's so cool.
She, the other thing is, I think it's kind of funny, is if you stay in that room and you're a man and a woman and you're not married, supposedly she kind of gets in the middle of you. And
what, so you can't spoon?
Yeah, she don't want you to spoon or spork if you work for KFC. I was dating this one fat girl one time. She was so big we couldn't spoon. We had a ladle.
Oh.
Anyways.
You're so bad.
So, yeah, supposedly she gets in the middle and she'll try to prevent anything from happening because, you know, back in her day.
But what if
that
he
was
boinks
something,
her?
I don't think that's going to happen. This isn't a Chris Brown story or who was that? Not Chris Brown.
Oh.
Bobby Brown. Yeah, Chris Brown just knocked the hell out of her. But that's the story with room 217. Now, what about some other ghosts at the Stanley Hotel? Well, the fourth floor is supposedly haunted by children. I mean, first of all, we talked about the owner, the original owner of the land, the fourth Earl of Dunraven. And it sounds so much like a damn Tim Burton movie or something.
I know. I was just saying, it's just a weird word.
Coming Memorial Day, the fourth Earl of Dunraven.
It's a weird word.
But, so he supposedly haunts room 407. And people said they can hear, you know, still smell his pipe smoke and a couple other things. So I don't know if he was the only person to ever smoke a pipe or not, where they just assume it's him. But
you mean that was his room?
I don't know if that was his room, but that for some reason that's the room they say he haunts.
Oh, but the children has a different room?
The children have room 418. They hear laughter and stuff like that all down the hallways.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So nothing like having a bunch of dead children laughing in the hallways to make your trip more memorable.
Well, I mean, it's better to let them laughing than like evil and like I'm going to kill you.
Well,
bitch.
That's the whole thing is that everybody says that the ghosts that they have there, that none of them are, you know, mean ghosts. They're all happy ghosts.
Just saying that that's okay. Which
brings us to Lucy. I don't know how she's a happy ghost, but Lucy was a young girl, approximately 13 years old. Back in they never really gave a day for this, so who knows how true any of this is. But she was a runaway, and she was staying in the basement. The basement is kind of made like a cave area. There's tunnels and stuff like that. And some maintenance men found her down there. And even though she was young, and even though it was cold outside, they gave her the boot, kicked her out.
Oh.
It dropped below zero that night. The temperatures did, and they found her frozen dead. So she died of exposure. Now, supposedly, she haunts the hotel, and she likes to close doors and open doors and shut and close cabinets. And supposedly, she can be seen in a pink dress. And there's actually a picture floating on the internet. Look up Lucy picture from Stanley Hotel, and you'll actually see a picture of her in the pink dress standing there that somebody caught. I think it was last year. It wasn't that long ago.
It's pretty creepy, actually.
But it's a pretty cool picture. But that's pretty much our story on the Stanley Hotel. So you can kind of be your own judge. Those rooms are all available if anybody wants to rent them. I'm sure they're pretty costly. But it's a pretty cool ass story, and to know that that's where The Shining came from, the inspiration, and there's several ghosts that haunt the place.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, let's don't.
Let's do. They got friendly ghosts.
Yeah, I don't see no Casper there. Let's go ahead, and we're going to do a little interview. These gentlemen are pretty cool. I'm going to give you a heads up that the sound quality is not as great on this interview. There was a little bit of problems in the beginning, but it does get better as it goes. So just kind of stick with it. These guys are out of Las Vegas. They've got about 30 years of ghost hunting experience between them. They go by the Haunted Explorers. They sell merchandise. They've got a Facebook page. They're on Twitter. They've got a website, but they've been to some of the coolest places. We'll eventually probably get them back on again when we have our Virginia City show, which we'll do somewhere down the line because they've all been there, and it'd be cool to have some insight. But right now, let's listen to the guys from the Haunted Explorers. All right, guys, welcome back to Hillbilly Horror Stories. I've got something cool for you tonight because, as you know, we very seldom ever do interviews. But when we do, it's usually something I think is really going to bring an added dimension to the show. And even though what we've interviewed in the past has been podcast hosts and some of the good ones out there, tonight's going to be a little bit different because we actually have a group of, I guess for the lack of a better term, we'll say ghost hunters. I know not everybody likes that term, but it's the Haunted Explorers out of Las Vegas. And I ran across these guys, and they seemed very interesting to me. And I thought if they're interesting to me, you guys are going to like it too. So I wanted to bring them on the air. So who I've got with me tonight is Stephen, Tim, and Murad. Did I get that right, Murad?
Yes, you did.
Okay, awesome. Guys, tell me a little bit about your group, how many members you have, how long you've been doing this, and what got you into it?
Well, I started the Haunted Explorers we're going to be getting up to our fourth year in March. And so I started it about 4 years ago because I really was just looking into starting a group that just got rid of all the whole politics of the other groups that I was involved with. So I really just wanted to start from scratch and just really get out there and just start, investigate and then just, enjoy the process involved in investigating instead of, every little tidbit that needs to be, done. It's trying to get the politics out of it and just sticking with investigating. And my full background in investigating was I'm the type of person that just never had a personal experience. I've just always been fascinated by the paranormal, and I never really did anything or went about trying to investigate or anything on my own. But finally, I just decided, hey, what the heck? I'm just going to go out and start trying some places around town. And from there, I got involved with another team in Vegas and worked with them for several years. And just one day, it just came to me, Haunted Explorers just popped in my head. I just need to just follow this and go with it, because I don't know, just something from it just popped up, and I was just like, something from this is telling me to go for it. And so I did. The crew we got out, it's been awesome to meet, you know, get them all involved, and places we've been going to and places we're looking forward to going to. I mean, it's just been awesome ride so far.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick and jump in, because you've already intrigued me. When you say, without getting too specific, because I know you don't want to step on any toes, when you say the politics of the other groups, give me an idea of what you're talking about when you say politics, because most of us out here won't have any clue because we've not been involved in anything like that.
Well, I understand that, like, each group needs to have structure and, you know, and rulings to them, but when it got to a point to where there was just somebody was coming up with like a 58-page book, and I'm not joking about that. It was about 58 pages worth of ruling that needed to be done. And it's understandable that when you make a group, that everyone should be able to understand, you know, what your role is, what you're supposed to do, you know. And as everyone starts coming together more of a family instead of friends, you know, you have each other's backs, and there's no need to do all that nitpicking and everything else like that. And so, when it started getting to the point to where I was in a group to where it was just like everything was just so rule oriented, I was just like, these rules are ruining the whole enjoyment of the process. That's what it was. I mean, it just wasn't too, you know, I'm not saying that the Haunted Explorers are completely rule-less. I mean, we still have, you know, rules that we try to abide by, you know, but it was just when it was getting to that point to where I was just like, this isn't fun anymore, because the politics of it are just creating more disaster than anything. I mean, and so that's what I wanted. I just wanted to get back into the fun of investigating, and that's why I created the Haunted Explorers.
Could you give an example of some of the rules that you're talking about, just so we can have a guideline of what you guys mean by rules as opposed to what you're doing?
Well, there was, like, if you missed, like, even one or two meetings, you were automatically kicked out. I mean, it's understandable, like, if we all have our own personal lives. So, I mean, that's always been from the get-go, from us starting, was the understanding that life, family life, jobs, personal responsibilities, those are always going to be number one. And then number two is when we can, then we try to get together and we do an investigation. And if we all can get together, then some of us can get together and go off and do an investigation. So, we don't stick to just the whole team thing. It doesn't have to be 100% team oriented. We can split off and all go do our own things under the Haunted Explorers, and then come back together and we talk to the, you know, everyone talks to the team. We share our adventures. We share our stories. We post what we find on the internet, you know, on our website. You know, it's just really just core function is just investigate. That's what we do.
How do you get most of your investigations? Do you have a lot of people reaching out to you saying, hey, I feel like something's going on, can you come out and take a look?
That's part of it. And then the other part of it is just us trying to figure out where we can go. You know, aside from the fact that a lot of places just constantly keep asking for tons of money, which is kind of hard. Like I said, from us, you know, from the number one thing that we try to do is, you know, that your family and job and, you know, life comes first, you know, and your finances come first. So from there, we have to plan out, you know, like where's the money going to take us to get to a place, you know, and how, you know, and we try to make sure we work everything out.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. So what are some of, you can just give me one or you can give me a couple. I won't make you narrow it down. What are some of the coolest places that you've been able to investigate that just stand out to you?
Just getting invited to, you know, our most recent, we got invited to go do the Railroad Pass Casino, which was awesome. We were the first official group to, you know, to officially investigate the place. You know, we've been to Mandalay Bay, the Foundation Room. That was an amazing place. You didn't think that things would happen there, but we did get evidence there.
You guys have some YouTube footage of that too, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so how can people see that if they want to be able to see some of the footage of you guys? Can you give your YouTube channel?
Yeah, just go to youtube.com/thehauntedexplorers.
Awesome. What about this? Let me ask you this. So that's, those are some of the coolest places. Let's talk about the Railroad Casino. I can't remember the exact name you gave to it. How old is it? Is that one of the real old casinos, or is it a newer casino?
That was one of the first older casinos that was built. They kind of built it, I think it was back in the 30s, I in the 30s when they were building the Hoover Dam. That casino is actually holding the number one business license in the state of Nevada.
Oh, wow.
When we're talking like number-wise, there was one prior to that, and I don't know the name of the casino offhand, but they shut down, and now Railroad Pass, that is the actual number one holder.
What is the reason that the hauntings are going on there? Is that they got like a mobster past, or what seemed to be the rumors that float around there?
I think the biggest thing was it was built more or less for the Hoover Dam, so you had a lot of workers building the Hoover Dam, so they needed a place to stay and eat and everything. So you had quite a bit of influx of the workers out there. You had some Western people. There were some foreigners that stayed out there, but a lot of it was mainly built around that.
So let me ask you this. That was the coolest place. What are some of the creepiest things you guys have seen, either as a group or individually, during your time of doing this? Anything just kind of jump out at you, so to speak?
I think for me, I could say like the creepiest thing I've ever walked into, you've probably seen it a lot, it was the Clown Motel.
Yes.
I'm not scared of clowns, but you know, you just walk into like a hotel and it's all a bunch of clowns. So I just thought that was, I don't know, it's not my type of thing.
You're not a clown person.
I'm okay with clowns. Not a clown hotel though.
Is that a place that you guys got to investigate, or just something that you just on your own just kind of ran into?
That's actually located out in Tonopah, Nevada. And, you know, we've seen it on TV a few times, and we wanted to go at least check it out. I don't believe that's some place I would investigate. You know, the options are still there. I think we would still do that if we were asked. But something that's on the bucket list, I don't believe that one's on the page.
No. But they have the graveyard right next door to
them. Yeah.
So what about you other guys? You got anything that stands out to you?
I kind of like what's the place called? Auburn Hill in California there?
Oh, Albert Hill Elementary School in Lake Elsinore, California.
Yeah, that was actually a good one for us. I actually pretty much got touched. All I felt was this really ice cold, like, hand, and we actually had it on camera when we saw the little fingerprints on my back.
Oh, wow.
There's a video of it on our YouTube page where we've gone to Albert Hill several times, and it's our second trip there. We were asking for the kids to come and go up to the chalkboard to do a little bit of homework assignment. And upon that time, when we were asking them, Barad made like a ooh sound, you know, and we looked over at him, and he's like, something just touched me or pushed me. And we lifted up his shirt, and he has pretty much, you can see the outline of a little child's hand on his back.
Oh, that is scary.
It was ice cold, though. It wasn't like a hot feeling. So I just didn't know what it was for the moment there until they showed it on camera. I was like, whoa. So that was pretty cool, having a handprint on my back.
That's always the things that freak me out the most, when you see the videos of when you feel something and you raise your shirt and there's a scratch or there's a handprint or something. Those are the things that just make you feel like something's evil in the room, as opposed to something, you know, just a regular ghost.
Well, when we've gone there, there's never been like anything that felt evil, but still on Essence, there's like the local kids or whoever you want, I don't know who it is, or adults, have been doing like their own fake satanic stuff within the school. So who knows, you know, what they brought forward or, you know, or summoned or, you know. So there's been times that we were in there and there's been some really weird stuff that's happened. And it's, you don't know if it's accounted to something that's they did or, you know, or maybe just residual haunting that's there. But, you know, you always just try to, you know, make sure you're well protected when you're out there as well.
Don't forget there's a lot of bats too in that place.
Yeah, bats always make things much creepier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a quick question for each one of you, and we'll start with you, Stephen.
Okay.
If you can investigate any place in the world, money wasn't an object, you could just go and set up and investigate, what would the place be for you?
Like one of my biggest places I'd love to get to is I'm trying to think of what the name of this. It's an old tuberculosis clinic, but it's what's that name on?
Waverly Hills.
Yes, Waverly Hills. Yeah, there was no money. You know, money was an option. I would love to just go to Waverly Hills and just spend the night there, just hanging out, investigating. It just seems like that place. Everyone's getting activity when they go there, and I would just. It would be a dream for me. I mean, that or Myrtle's Plantation. I would just, if somebody said, give me your arm and I'll go. I'll give you my arm so I can go to that place. I mean, that would be huge to go to the place.
We've actually done shows on both of those. And as far as Waverly, I am sitting right now about an hour and 10 minutes away from Waverly. And used to live in Louisville where it's at, and I actually have spent the night in there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's I got some cool pictures I'll have to send to you guys from that I snapped up there. But it's a really cool place. And actually, if you listen to the podcast we did on Waverly, we actually got a little sexual activity going on up in there. So in the morgue. In the morgue. So a few people can say that, but So what about you, Tim? What's your one place if you had a choice?
Well, I guess it's a toss between two of them. I will have to say Myrtle's Plantation. My wife, who's also on the team, she's not here either. Everybody's at work except for the three of us. Myrtle's Plantation is the biggest one. And also, I want to go back to Australia where I did Maitland Gow Prison.
Oh, that's
and
interesting.
That one I would rather go to just because... The time that we went was during an Australian marathon, and we kind of got, free roam of the prison, but it was kind of locked down between, 50 people, and personally, I'd rather do it with the five of us, because that was that is a pretty haunted place there.
Now, see, I'm glad you brought that up, because we actually have a lot of Australian listeners, and I've been trying to come up with some show ideas for some of our listeners overseas. And we're doing one next week on the Japanese forest for our Japanese listeners. And then we're going to do one in Australia. And I've got a couple of our listeners that were coming up with ideas. But that sounds like a pretty cool idea on a show by itself.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, last but not least, Murad, what's your place?
Actually, you actually said it. It was in Japan, the haunted forest. That's
no kidding.
One of the main places I would always love to go.
Nakatomi? Is that it? No. What is the name?
I've seen it a few times. I can't think of the name of it, but it's the forest that...
The Suicide Forest?
Yeah, Suicide Forest. That's the name.
Okay.
And then Gettysburg.
I don't know. The whole Suicide Forest thing. You might go in and not come out.
It's funny when you get to when you can get a microphone in front of you and talk to people all over the world. I put something on our Facebook page about doing a show next week about the Suicide Forest. I get a listener from Australia send me a message and say that her brother has actually been there and was telling me things about this that I won't go into detail about because she told it to me in private. But how cool is it that you can put something on Facebook and 15 minutes later you got a listener halfway across the world talking about she's got a relative that's been there and then giving you details about a place.
That's cool.
It's unbelievable what the internet is able to do for people now.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, wow.
Guys, I appreciate you giving me some time today. I know all of us have busy lives, and we'd all love to be able to just do this for a living and not be able to do regular jobs, but we know that's not reality for most of us. That does bring up an interesting question, though. A lot of people see the big ghost hunter shows on TV, and we all know the names. I'm not going to throw all the names out there, but you see all of them. What do you guys know about that lifestyle? I mean, these guys, for the most part, most of them still have regular jobs and stuff, just the same as you do. Am I correct?
Yeah. A big thing with all of those shows, they're doing like most other paranormal investigators would do, is they're spending, hours upon days, investigating a place, because everybody knows you just can't walk up into a place and get something. It's not, everything's on command. I will tell you though, too, as well as I do, it's all Hollywood. So most of the stuff you will see on there is probably not real.
Yeah, we had that situation. Like I said, I was tied in close with a lot of the Louisville stuff and like Waverly when Ghost Hunters came there and did their show. I mean, it was common knowledge that some of that stuff was set up, and it kind of sucks. And to be honest with you, and it's not against anybody, because I love what what you guys do, and I love what people go out and do. I just have a hard time watching those shows, and I used to love those shows. But, you know, now it just seems like they're more theatrics than they are reality. And it's like you said, you know, some of these shows are 24 hours, and some of them are, they stay for 48 hours. And what, but, you know, it's like you said, how much can you really get to really prove anything in that time? And it's just amazing. Somebody can walk in, spend a night, and they got all this stuff on tape. And I don't know. It's just, it really is hard to believe. I'm not going to say it's all fake, because I'm not going to say that, just because it's not fair to them or of any of these shows. But it is kind of hard to believe you can just walk in, spend one night, and get all this footage enough to make a whole show. And it's just, you know, I've seen enough to where I know that's not necessarily how things work.
Yeah. I mean, you're right about that. But, you know, some of the shows that if they spend, you know, a day or two, and sometimes they may film for a week just to get all that footage. You know, some days you may not have any activity. I mean, some other days you may just have way too much activity that, you know, all you can do is just squeeze it in the 30 minutes. I mean, for what we do, we've gone to a bunch of places where we've had no activity at all. And when we go back, you know, 3 months, a year later, all kinds of activities happen. So, yeah, you do have to throw in things for your weight.
It's amazing. But, you know, you're right. I mean, it's hit or miss most of the time. So, guys, yeah. tell my listeners out there how they can get in touch with you, how they can follow you. I know you've got a bunch of social media. What's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
The best way, we have our website, thehauntedexplorers.org. Once you go to that page, all the links to our social media is on the top right-hand side. So we have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. We've got the YouTube. We also have a store on there. We've got an online store, so if they want to pick up any shirts, they've got that as well. They can send us by email, which is info@thehauntedexplorers.org. Another way to get a hold of us. Another thing we do want to put out there, we don't do any home investigations. It's very rare that we do them, and if we were to do a home investigation, it's typically only for, like, somebody close, because they're too much liability. It's kind of too much time to work with somebody trying to find out if they're loony or if it's a real thing that's happening, and it's just something we're not currently interested in right now.
I can definitely understand that. I mean, it's there's a lot of people out there with a lot of loose heads, we'll say, and you can't always believe everything that's going on. It's a sad world we live in, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for being on the show, and I know my listeners are going to love hearing from you, and I appreciate it, and I'll definitely keep following you guys.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having us. Don't forget to subscribe and like us on YouTube.
Absolutely. Everybody go out there. Remember, just Google The Haunted Explorers. I know when you Google it, most of that stuff, including the YouTube stuff, shows up. So they do got a pretty cool looking logo, so I'm sure their merch is actually pretty damn cool too. Thank you guys so much, and be looking forward to talking to you in the future.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, so those were the Haunted Explorers. Like I said, we'll probably hear from those guys down the road. We wanted to read a story. Now, I saved this one for last because this is actually pretty cool. Josh Hoskins, not the guy from Cougar Tennis, Josh Hopkins. Joshua Hoskins from Portland, Michigan, sent us this, and he's, you know, basically, I'll let his words do the speaking on it. He said, "Hey guys, my name is Josh, and I found you about 2 weeks ago. I listen to you every day while I'm working. I don't normally send messages, but I listened to your sleep paralysis episode last night and actually had an incident. I've had several times before, but this one was a little bit different. When I have an episode, it's usually I can't move anything and I feel awake, but I'm watching myself sleep from the side and a black mass floating over top of me. And sometimes I see a smile looking down at me as I'm sleeping or awake with a grip over my mouth so I can't move my mouth. Last night it was different altogether. It was me sleeping, then feeling the heavy pressure of my whole body and unable to move anything, but I could open my eyes. I did, and I was looking directly into the eyes of the black mass. And again, the hand over my mouth to speak, I saw the smile, and it seemed to last forever. All of a sudden, I hear, 'You leave him alone.' It was not my voice. As I looked to my left, I saw a board or something swing towards the mass. I felt a strange sensation on my nose, and the mass struck and dissipated. I felt free, and I woke up, got my bearings, and was like, 'Okay, that was a new one.' Well, here is something that really put this over the top. I felt my nose start running really fast, so I ran for a tissue in the bathroom and looked in the mirror, and it was bleeding all over the place. I thought dry air or something, but I could not get it to stop. I kept putting the tissue in, and it just wouldn't, you know, kept going. Anytime that it did stop, it would start right back up again as soon as I dozed off. This continued all night until the sun came up, and it just stopped right when I said out loud, "I'm going to the hospital." Now, again, I've had several episodes with sleep paralysis since high school, and if the nose bleeding hadn't happened, I wouldn't have given it a second thought. This afternoon, I remembered hearing your episode yesterday, and I thought, what the hell? I'll see what he says. So thank you for your time, and I hope I didn't ramble too much. I love your show, and I'm a bald man too, so we have that in common. The struggle is real. Best of luck to y'all, and if y'all know have any questions, feel free to reach me, Josh. Josh, that is one screwed up story.
Yeah, I cannot even imagine what you must go through. I mean, if it's happened all these years, well, I don't even know what to say about that. I want to say I feel bad for you because I can't imagine going through that, and you really don't know what to expect next.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like you have a guardian angel, though, so that's a positive.
That's very true. So.
That's if you want my advice, that's what it sounds like. I would say somebody's kind of looking over you, and that would explain the board or something flying. That would also explain, the voice that wasn't yours telling you to leave you alone. So I think that's pretty cool. So I think you're probably in pretty good shape.
Well, let's hope for no more incidents that get any worse than that, but I'm like Jerry, I think you have a guardian angel looking over you, and thanks for sharing that story with us, because that's pretty crazy.
Yep, we appreciate that, and we thank you for listening, and we're glad you found the show. Spread the word to all your friends. So with that being said, we're at the end of the show. This is the part where we shamelessly ask for you to give us iTunes reviews. This has been an awesome week. We've already, last week's episode beat the one before that and the one before that. We're cruising right along. You guys get all the glory for that because you're the one spreading the word and listening, and we greatly appreciate it. But the iTunes reviews help us as much as anything, so if you could please keep doing that. We do appreciate it. We've gotten some awesome donations over the past week and a half.
Thank you guys. We used
some of that to buy a microphone that we are currently using, so we've got a new mic already. We got a couple of pieces to get, so hopefully the sound quality continues to get better. But we appreciate you guys, and thank you for the donations. Thank you for the T-shirt sales. Of course, you can go to our website, hillbillyhorrorstories.com, and you can either donate if you so like. So if you can't, hey, we completely understand. We're still going to keep doing the thing. And if you want to buy a T-shirt and represent, we got some pretty cool-ass designs, and I'll probably be putting some more on there in the next week or two of some new stuff. But once again, thank you to all of you. Thank you to all of our military and military Amen. All over the world, no matter what country you're standing for. We appreciate you, and thank you for making our world safe.
Just remember, y'all have a great week and love one another.
Yep, and we will see you guys next week.
Love you guys.